Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
In my dream, I saw planets burning in the long night, and armies of the dead overrunning the cities of men. All in a dream. And all so very long ago. Or maybe it was just yesterday. All stories come to an end. In time.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Coda. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Corey James, Peter Stray, Barbara Pennellini, Elizabeth Demery, Sonny Lasky, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Bruce Allen Rauscher, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Doug Prenslin, and Mort Shelby. Episode 2, Hear the Monsters. Deathstalker went dancing back through time, star systems whirling dizzyingly past like shimmering sands beneath his speeding feet. The galaxy spun around him, its many tiny lights blinking on and off like warning signs. Stars and comets formed an endless rainbow path back into the past. He could feel Hazeldark's presence, always tantalizingly just ahead of him. He could feel other presences too, moving around him in the time stream. Some traveled into the past beside him, while others headed the other way, into the future. Some felt human, while others very definitely didn't. Owen could have reached out to them, but didn't. Perhaps because he wasn't sure they would approve of what he was going to do. And so he danced on into the past, alone but quietly determined, following the trail that Hazel had left behind her. Sometimes it seemed to him that there were other directions than the one he was following of simple past and future. Other directions, other possibilities that he could follow. He wondered if these were the time streams from which Hazel had called her other selves during the Great Rebellion. Other time streams, where he had not died, and Hazel had never become a monster. They tempted him with the possibilities of comfort, but he continued on his chosen path. He knew his duty, and anyway, only one Hazel had ever really mattered to him. Finally, the distance between the two of them began to narrow. She was slowing, and he was catching up. He slowed his dance, and the galaxy expanded around him as he sank back into it. He ran through enlarging star systems, pirouetting through the hearts of roaring suns, and out the other side, unharmed. He was changing, just as Hazel had. He could feel the extent of her change in the presence only just ahead of him, indications that she was becoming something else, something other, something he no longer recognized. He fought to catch up with her, but somehow he never could, perhaps because she was driven by insanity and obsession, and he was still sane, if only for the moment. He knew he couldn't see the things he was seeing, do the things he was doing, and remain unchanged. He had to fight to keep from feeling overwhelmed just by the sheer scale of what he was attempting. It wasn't that long ago for him that he'd been just another tired and burnt-out warrior, fighting a hopeless battle in the back streets of Mistport. He reached out stubbornly with his mind, trying to force a contact with the presence ahead of him. But although he touched something...
Hazel! Hazel! It's Owen! Owen Deathstalker!
He couldn't make her hear him. She had gone on ahead of him, on a journey and process he could barely comprehend. And for all the meteoric speed of his dance, he was being left behind. But something came back to him from that fleeting touch of minds,
a single memory of the last hour of Hazel's life, in which she had still been merely human. After she left Shub, the metal world the AIs made to house their consciousnesses, Hazel Dark went to Hayden, home of the Madness Maze. She thought she would need more power from the maze in order to travel back through time. She materialized outside the Madness Maze, like a child come home seeking the approval of a parent. But the maze ignored her.
Maze! I need you!
But the maze refused her. She couldn't see or find an entrance anywhere.
You shall not ignore me!
She tried to force her way in, attacking it with all her power, focused through a mind already half mad with grief and horror. And she tore power from the maze, wrenching it out, raw and potent, by the sheer force of her disturbed will. She was crying, tears running jerkily down her cheeks, though she was past feeling them. She was leaving humanity behind through her own will, even as she acted for the most human of reasons. The power burnt within her, and like the phoenix, she emerged shining brightly from the ashes of her old self. And so she let go of time and plunged back into the past, beginning the long journey that would make her into the Terror. Owen digested the memory as he slowed and slowed his progress, and finally dropped back into space and time, at the exact location Hazel had chosen before him. He wondered what he'd find, and why she'd stopped here, of all possible places. In the beginning was the First Empire. It was wild and glorious. It didn't last. The stars had stopped wheeling around him, and now sparkled solemnly in place. He should have felt exhausted, like the first time he'd traveled in time, pursued by the Recreated. But instead he felt exhilarated. He looked around him, grinning widely, surrounded by the icy vacuum of space, which had no power over him. He felt entirely relaxed and comfortable, even though he didn't feel any need to breathe. It seemed he was beginning his own changes. He checked the pulse in his wrist, and was relieved to find that at least it was still there. Golgotha turned slowly beneath him, but it looked very different now. Against the blue and gray of its surface, huge, magnificent cities blazed against the dark, vast as countries and as intricately shaped as snowdrops. They shone so very brightly, with all the colors of the rainbow, as though the whole world had been studded with precious jewels. Auroras of smooth, soothing colors wrapped the world, as though to keep it safe from all harm. On the other hand, Owen couldn't help noticing that the planet was surrounded by all kinds of orbiting junk. Satellites of every shape and size, built with function rather than aesthetics in mind, formed a metal ring around the world. Huge star docks held half-built starships, assembled in orbit because they were too big to ever leave the ground. And everywhere Owen looked, starships came and went, in their thousands and their hundreds of thousands, flashing past him like so many fleeting thoughts or intentions. Golgotha had never known so much traffic, even at the height of its power. Owen focused his mind on a few ships at random, studying them carefully, but none of them resembled any configuration he was familiar with. He realized he still didn't feel any need to breathe. How much had he changed already? Was he doomed to continue to change until he became another Terror at the last? He felt stronger, more powerful, but still human. And yet, if he was changing, could he hope to understand or appreciate the extent of the change from the inside? Would he even notice as his humanity fell away? Panic surged up, and he pushed it ruthlessly back.
Human is as human does. As long as I still care about Hazel, I'm still human enough.
And yet, he had to wonder where the power had come from, that had made his long trip through time possible and filled him now. Why wasn't he feeling drained like before? Owen decided very firmly that he'd think about that later. He had other, more important things on his mind right now. Hazel had definitely stopped her plunge back through time at this point. For what purpose or for how long, he couldn't tell. He could feel the trail start up again, heading even further back into the past, but he was curious as to why she'd chosen to stop here. Roughly 1,000 years would put him in the time of the First Empire, before it declined and fell, for reasons long forgotten. His old historian's instincts kicked in at the possibility of seeing the legendary First Empire in its prime, and perhaps even discovering some clue as to why it fell so far and so hard. Perhaps the greatest mystery in humanity's long history. This was the kind of opportunity he dreamed of in his younger days. He'd come a long way to end up back at his beginnings. He reached out with his mind, trying for some sense of what lay in wait on the planet below, but the cities blazed with life, billions upon billions of minds roaring in a constant bedlam. It was just too big, too complex for him to understand, even in his new changed state. He found that oddly comforting. While he was busy thinking all this, half a dozen orbiting satellites had detected his sudden presence and were now homing in on him. They moved slowly in his direction, great rough metal shapes bristling with energy spikes and sensors, each one the size of a starship. They took up pre-programmed positions around Owen, and then all their metal spikes blazed with crackling energies, forming a scintillating cage around him. What? He looked up, startled, as the trap closed, flinching back despite himself from the sheer power hammering on the vacuum all around him. The wild, searing energies held enough power to light a city for a month. He could sense it. Just being this close to so much raw energy would have been enough to fry any normal creature. Owen cautiously probed the satellites with his mind, but there was no trace of even the simplest AI, only the basic binary codes of standard computers. Owen considered his situation thoughtfully. He could easily escape the trap by just dropping back into the time stream, but he was curious as to who had placed such a brutal trap in orbit and why. He had a strong feeling it probably had something to do with Hazel. So he waited patiently, turning slowly this way and that in the vacuum by a simple effort of will, until finally someone came to inspect what their sprung trap had caught. At first, all he could see were two small bright lights heading towards him, but they grew quickly in size. He'd been expecting some form of ship or flyer, and so was surprised to see two human forms sailing towards him. They seemed to move under their own power, wrapped in shimmering silver force shields, like two suits of perfectly fitted armor. Their faces were blank mirrors, with no obvious sensors, but slight humps on both their backs suggested some kind of propulsion unit. The four suits fit closely enough for Owen to be sure his visitors were one male and one female. They slowed to a controlled halt, a cautious distance away from the cage, and looked Owen over carefully. He gave them a cheerful wave. It didn't seem to reassure either of them. Owen realized they were trying to talk to him. He waited impatiently for his comlink to find the right frequency.
I am Dominic Cairo, Defantut Humanitum. This was an investigate Glory Chichiro. From what you find place you come, and your mouse capouch Simutsu's cold vacuum with wall protection.
Hello. I am Owen. Who are you?
It was clear they couldn't understand him. 1,000 years can change a language completely. So Owen reached out and took the knowledge he needed directly from their minds, so he could talk in their tongue. He hadn't known he could do that until he did it. Apparently the changes he was going through affected his mind as well as his body.
Hi, I'm Owen. Just a visitor passing through. Who are you?
I am Dominic Cairo, Defender of Humanity. My associate is the investigator, Glory Chijiro. From what far place have you come? And how is it you're able to survive cold vacuum without protection?
You're really not going to like the answer to that.
And yet we must insist upon an answer. We defend Heartworld and have responsibility for this sector. Under the authority of the Emperor Aether, we require an answer.
All right. I'm from the future. About 1,000 years further on. Don't ask me how I got here, it would only upset you. I only have to think about the implications of what I'm doing and I start to whimper. May I ask why you've bottled me up in this cage? Is this how you greet all your visitors?
Just certain special cases, such as yourself. You had better come with us.
Do I have a choice?
What do you think?
Chojiro gestured imperiously at the 6 satellites, and they moved obediently after her as she started back the way she'd come. Dominic moved easily beside her, comfortable at her side, as though he belonged there. Partners of some kind, Owen decided. He was a little surprised to find they had investigators this far back. And what the hell was a Defender of Humanity? Was there a war on with some alien species? The history of the First Empire was full of holes on small and large matters. Owen's historian soul rubbed its hands together eagerly. The things he'd be able to tell his academic peers when he got back. If he got back. Owen allowed the energy cage to tow him along behind Dominic and Glory. He was pretty sure by now that he could break out of it anytime he wanted, but he was interested to see where he was being taken. The journey turned out to be a long, slow process, and Owen was soon bored enough to seriously consider taking charge and speeding things up a bit, but he thought he'd better not. He didn't want to freak out his new friends just yet. They seemed enough on edge already. So Owen just settled back and watched the stars, the satellites, and the huge ships coming and going. Occasionally, just for the fun of it, he reached out and rewrote the markings on their hulls. The planet that would one day be called Golgotha, but was now Heartworld, had only the single moon, and that was apparently where they were going. Owen was mildly curious. In his time, the moon was just a dumping ground for toxic waste in the great caverns under the surface. It loomed up before him, a great expanse of cold gray rock, a single huge tower thrust up from the surface, a solid steel block with no obvious openings or markings.
What is it? The spike.
They all descended towards the spike, which turned out to be surrounded by a high-intensity force field. Owen could feel it, prickling against his augmented senses. Glory turned around and gestured at the satellites, and the crackling energy cage contracted suddenly to surround Owen, while the satellites backed away. Owen considered informing the investigator that this close-up the energies tickled, but decided against it. He wanted Glory and her partner to feel secure around him, for the moment at least. Dominic made a series of gestures, and a corridor opened up in the force shield, its boundaries clearly designated by bright hollow markings. Dominic and Glory escorted Owen through, maintaining a safe distance from the energy cage, and then the force shield closed behind them again. Ahead of them, a series of heavy blast doors opened and closed, admitting them at last to the interior of the spike. They ended up in a huge elevator, big enough to handle a crowd, and began a long journey down through the spike and on into the interior of the moon. Owen was beginning to have some idea of just what kind of place he'd been brought to. The elevator went down a long, long way before the doors finally opened on an entirely prosaic reception area. Dominic and Glory indicated for Owen to go ahead of them, so he took his energy cage for a casual stroll around the reception area. All four walls were covered with dozens of monitor screens, each showing a different view, constantly changing to cover different angles. A central comm and control console seemed familiar enough, if a little ornate and over-designed for Owen's taste. The energy cage suddenly snapped off, leaving only two rings of crackling energy surrounding his wrists. Owen tested them surreptitiously and kept the smile off his lips. Dominic and Glory stood before him, and their silver force shield snapped off. For the first time, Owen could get a clear look at his captors. Glory Chojiro turned out to be a short, stocky woman, barely 5 feet tall. She was well-muscled, with broad shoulders and a jutting bosom. Her face had clear oriental lines, with jet-black hair and eyes. She was entirely naked, but her skin was ruby-pink metal for as far as the eye could see, and Owen could see pretty far. There were no joints or seams to mark the metal as some kind of armor, so Owen reluctantly accepted it had to be her skin. She seemed a bit on the small side for an investigator, but there was no denying she held herself like a warrior, even though she carried no visible weapons. Dominic Cairo was tall and slender, almost aesthetically muscled, and also bare-arse naked. His skin was a cool sky blue, marked on the face and chest with what appeared to be lines of metal circuitry. He had a kindly, thoughtful face under a shock of tufty silver hair. He put a hand to his bare hip, and the hand disappeared for a moment before reappearing with a large and blocky energy weapon in it. Owen raised an eyebrow.
Good trick. Where did the gun come from?
Subspace pocket. Keyed only to me, of course. You have never seen one before? Interesting. All our weapons and necessary work items are held in a subspace locker at right angles to this dimension and pre-programmed to accept only our orders, so kindly restrain any aggressive impulses.
Move against us and you will be punished.
No, perish the thought.
Owen realized he was breathing normally again, but was distracted by another thought.
Don't you two ever get cold wandering around like that? In the nude, I mean.
Glory motioned to Dominic.
Told you he was a barbarian. probably from one of the outer worlds where they still suffer from taboos.
He says he's from the future, and he did trigger the satellites. There's also the unresolved question as to how he was able to survive in vacuum without our advantages.
There is more to me than meets the eye.
There would have to be. And bear yourself with courtesy in our presence.
Glory stepped forward to glare at him more efficiently.
You are now in the House of Correction, and headed for the holding pens, unless you can provide us with an acceptable explanation.
Yes, I thought this had to be some kind of prison. It's got that depressing ambience. What exactly am I being charged with?
Well, being weird and unusual, and just possibly a threat to humanity. As investigator and defender, my partner and I take such things most seriously. Be under no misapprehensions as to your situation. We have reason to fear creatures such as you, who appear out of nowhere and who fit no known parameters. We are at present deep beneath the surface of the moon, where we hold all the worst criminals humanity has to offer, the hardened recidivists, who can't or won't be helped.
So, what happens to them? They stay here till they die?
Of course not. We wipe them clean of their memories and leave them a blank slate, so that they can start again in a new life, untroubled by their past.
Here we deal with the worst of the worst. We have heard and seen it all, and we never give the benefit of the doubt.
Nice speech. Honest. I'm impressed. And thoroughly intimidated. How many criminals do you have here?
At present, 347.
Dominic seemed amiable enough, but his gun never wavered from covering Owen.
Security in the House of Correction is extremely tight. You will stay here until your fate is determined. Don't even think of trying to escape.
Oh, never crossed my mind. I only just got here. I suppose a friendly sit-down and chat over a nice cup of tea is out of the question.
They ignored him, pulling a whole series of unfamiliar tech items out of their subspace pockets. Dark, ugly things, bristling with metal spikes. Owen decided that there were very definite limits to what he was prepared to put up with, especially if it involved dropping his trousers and bending over. But fortunately, all Dominic and Glory wanted to do was study him from a safe distance. Owen could feel energy fluctuations moving over and around him, but none of it was particularly uncomfortable, so he just let them get on with it. He was actually curious to see what they had to say about his new condition. Dominic and Glory studied the readings they were getting, scowled and muttered a lot, and finally got into a short but intense fight over what it all meant.
Don't jump to foolish conclusions.
I'm not. What other explanation is there?
Look, why don't you just ask me what you want to know? I can pretty much guarantee in advance that you aren't going to like most of the answers, but then, I don't much either. In fact, there are times when I distinctly wish I would go away and stop bothering me. So, I am Owen, first of my family and lord of my clan. Rebel and warrior, hero and legend, or so they tell me. I spent most of my life studying to be a historian, but it turned out history had other plans for me. I have traveled back in time in pursuit of a friend who came before me. Does any of that help?
Not really.
All right, let's start with the basics. Who are you? I think I know what an investigator is, but what the hell is a defender of humanity?
Glory and Dominic looked at each other, and finally Glory shrugged angrily.
I am Investigator Chojiro. It is my duty and my honor to examine and oppose all extra-normal threats to humanity, from within or without. I have powers in the low and the high justice, and the right of execution without warning or appeal. I am presently stationed on Heartworld, center of the Empire, and I and all my brethren have been tasked to watch for the return of something like you, or what came before you.
I am Defender of Humanity, Dominic Cairo. It is my trust to ensure that the people of the Empire do not use newly discovered technology or medical enhancements to remake themselves into something inhuman. The nature of humanity must be respected and maintained, and I have powers in the low and the high justice to deal with anything that threatens it. I defend the spirit of humanity, a hard task in these days of vacuum dancers, water breathers, and heavy gravity prowlers. I see you do not recognize those terms. Originally, the process of adaptation was developed to enable people to fit the conditions on other planets. Why go to all the time and expense of changing a planet when it's so much easier to change the people? Unfortunately, the changes have run wild for the thrill or the fashion of it. There are many kinds of people now, and not all of them are fully human.
Both our castes were created 100 or so years ago, after a series of disastrous first contacts with alien species led to wars and the destruction of whole alien cultures in the name of human destiny. We are rebuilding them as best we can, and have sworn never to be inhuman again. A noble intent, but the accelerating rate of change in the human form is having its effect on the human mind and soul. No one can keep track of all the subspecies of humanity anymore, and there are nowhere near enough investigators or defenders these days. The Emperor grows old and does not care, and those below take their cue from him.
You have chosen a bad time to visit us, Owen, in these sad, despairing dog days of Empire.
Why are you here? What is your purpose?
I told you I'm from the future, searching for my friend who came here before me. You seem to be accepting the time travel bit rather more easily than I expected. Do you have time travel?
No. All such research was banned after the trouble we had with the Illuminati long ago. But we have had experience with your kind before. That is why you were caged and why you still wear the energy shackles. We will not risk such horror running loose again.
Why are you wearing that antique weapon?
Dominic pointed at the sword on Owen's hip.
Is it ceremonial or a symbol for your masculinity?
Neither. It's my sword, my weapon. Where I, or rather, when I come from, everyone bears a sword. We have energy guns too, of course, but we prefer to do our fighting with cold steel. It's an honorable weapon.
Dominic frowned for the first time.
Whatever could be honorable about killing people? The investigator and I carry energy guns. Our duty commands it, but they are simply accurate and brutally efficient. That is all that can be asked of a killing tool. It is a terrible responsibility to take another's life.
Why are you here, Owen? What do you want?
I followed my friend Hazel. Her trail led me here.
Hazel? That thing was human once?
Your friend may have begun as human, but what arrived here was more like a terrible force of nature, manifesting in high orbit amid a shower of tachyons, indicating that it was a time traveler. It had no physical form or dimensions, just a vast, horrid presence stamped directly onto reality by an effort of will. It was huge and powerful, and as merciless as any devil. It descended upon Heartworld, sweeping aside all our defenses, and raged across our world, spreading death and devastation. It tore open the earth and raged through the cities, and none of our weapons even touched it. We called it the Mad Mind, after a legend from the first days of Empire.
Eventually, with half our world reduced to blood and ruins, the Mad Mind disappeared as suddenly as it had arrived. And ever since, we have been waiting for another such monster to fall upon us out of time.
And here you are, in our power, to answer for the crimes of your friend.
Can we really do that? I mean, look at the fellow. He bears no resemblance to the Mad Mind in form or in nature. We cannot expect one individual to answer for the crimes of another. That would be inhuman.
It is the Emperor's will.
Is it? Perhaps if he met Owen, he would feel differently.
We cannot presume to...
Why is there so much starship traffic around Heartworld? Is there some emergency? Perhaps something I could help with?
No. Lots of people are leaving Heartworld for the outer colonies, to follow their own belief systems or to escape the much-predicted decline and fall of the Empire. Rats deserting a sinking ship. Humanity has become sundered, divided. We have all become too different from each other. Everyone must have the very latest technology implants, chemical enhancements, genetic restructuring. There are all kinds of subspecies now. Nothing is forbidden and experimentation is running wild. We know everything about how to alter the body, and not nearly enough about how such changes affect the soul. The humanity. We have a dozen different sexes now, group minds, human-animal combinations. Memes of fashions and minds swap bodies at will, wearing different forms like suits.
You're such a sweet old-fashioned thing, Dom. It's not all bad. Body change has enabled us to explore the universe. We walk upon worlds we could never have experienced before, because terraforming would have destroyed their true nature. We breathe poison, stand erect under the heaviest gravities, swim through gas worlds.
That's not why they change their bodies on Heartworld. Change is all the rage these days, for the thrill, for the kick, for the experience. We're all so desperate for new experiences. When nothing is forbidden, where do you go for all the cheap thrills and the sick little joys of sin? Everything is possible now, and that's why the Empire is falling apart. There are too many factions, subgroups, heretical beliefs. No consensus is ever possible. That's why Parliament became a joke. Because there are just too many positions, beliefs, philosophies. The only real authority comes from the Emperor, damn his immortal soul, and his Praetorian Guard. More and more, they usurp prerogatives that belong to the investigators and the defenders. Society is fragmenting and the center cannot hold. Humanity is divided by its own freedoms and appetites. Already, many of the border worlds have rejected Heartworld authority and fallen back into barbarism.
Glory looked sharply at Owen.
Is this your doing? Are you affecting Dom in some way with your future powers? He doesn't normally talk so much or so freely.
It's true, I don't.
Nothing to do with me. I think you've both been waiting for someone you could talk to. Someone who'd listen. Perhaps I can help now that I'm here. In my own time, I led a rebellion that brought about a golden age. Or so everyone keeps telling me.
No. We have our orders, our responsibilities. You will be held here while we inquire for further instructions. After the devastations of the Mad Mind, we cannot take chances with any visitors from your future.
But he doesn't belong here, not with these transgressors.
Who have you got here? What could still be a crime with the freedoms you have now?
As ingenuity expands possibilities, crime flourishes. The House of Corrections holds body-swap terrorists, personality cancers, talent thieves, cult leaders who spread enforcement memes to gather new followers, gender terrorists who try to create new sexes by experimenting on unwilling victims.
And Ansel de Langford, our latest arrival, head of the Thrill Kill cult. He encouraged his many followers to consider murder as a work of art. The more complex, the more grotesque, and the more extreme, the better. His followers vied to present him with ever greater atrocities, but he was always the worst of them all. He specialized in murders whose foul and awful nature destroyed the minds and souls of the victims' friends and families. The thrill-kill cult wiped out whole subspecies and cultures in the name of their perverted art before we finally shut them down. Psychopathic kick-killers, dancing and singing through the chaos of a falling empire. But he is ours now, at last, and we will squeeze every last piece of information out of him so that every last vestige of his cult will die with him.
You're never this chatty when it's just me.
She looked at Owen.
Any questions?
Yes. Why are you covered in pink metal?
While Owen was trying to look in every direction at once, Glory and Dominic looked quickly at the wall screens and then hurried over to the main console. The views on the monitor screens had stopped their shifting to concentrate on a series of cell doors sliding ponderously open, one after another, and people spilling out into steel corridors. All the prisoners were loose and already searching for weapons and a way out. Except for one man, who stood calmly before a security camera, smiling and entirely relaxed. He looked almost ordinary, until you got to the eyes. Owen shuddered as he looked at the man, looking out of the monitor screen. He'd seen eyes like that before. Cold, mad, killer's eyes. It didn't seem such a long time since he'd killed Kid Summerisle, the man they called Kid Death.
De Langford. Somehow he's got into the computers. He's triggered all the overrides, using codes he shouldn't even have known existed. There's nothing we can do.
He wanted to be brought here. He didn't set the others loose out of altruism. He's planning something. Something awful.
Call out the guards. How many do you have stationed here?
Glory and Dominic looked at him.
There are no guards. Just the computers. Usually that's all that's needed. After all, this is the moon. Where could anyone go if they did escape? De Langford isn't interested in escaping. He wanted to make some art here. Murder art. But he waited for something to bring us back here because he wanted an audience.
You mean he let the other prisoners out so they could watch as he killed you?
No, he thinks bigger than that. He's going to make the prisoners die for his entertainment. That's what he does. And we get to watch while he does it.
Except we can't allow that.
Why not? You said yourself they were the worst of the worst.
Dominic stared at him, openly shocked.
They are here to be cured and given new lives, not to be punished, executed. That would be inhuman. We only ever kill when we have to.
We may have to.
Glory's ruby hands moved swiftly over the control panels.
De Langford shut down all the non-lethal security measures. There's no way he could have hacked into these computers without help. He must have brought something up with him. He was supposed to have been thoroughly searched before he got here, inside and out. But his cult has people everywhere. The computers aren't going to repair themselves in time, Dom. We're going to have to stop this ourselves.
They'll be heading for the unloading bay. It's the only way off the moon. There isn't a ship docked at the moment, but they don't know that. We can bottle them up in the bay, incapacitate a few to calm down the rest, and then keep them sealed up until the computers are back online.
Too simple. De Langford will have planned for that. He's had plenty of time to think this through. His murders always have to be art.
But he doesn't know about me. He won't have allowed for my presence. Let me help. Please, I want to help.
Dominic and Glory looked at him, and then at each other.
We need him. And he seems rational enough.
Our orders
don't cover a prison break. Saving lives comes first.
Of course they do, Defender.
Glory hit a control on her wrist, and the energy shackles around Owen's wrists snapped off. Owen smiled. He could have broken free at any time, but he wanted them to trust him. He studied the wall screens, showing shouting men running through the plain steel corridors. There were a lot of them, but they didn't look like they'd be too much of a problem, unarmed. Except, all the prisoners seemed to have the same frenzied expression.
De Langford's infected them all with the thrill kill meme. They belong to him now. They live only to kill for him, for his art. We may have to kill them all anyway, because they'll never surrender. They won't be able to. Narfum!
Owen didn't understand the word she just used. The air around Glory Chojiro rippled suddenly as she disappeared, and a new form took her place. It was about a foot taller and a great deal broader, roughly humanoid in shape, but composed entirely of bright gold armor. The solid bullet head had no features, only a series of protrusions that might have been sensors. A row of gun muzzles thrust out of the barrel chest, and razor-edged blades lined the arms and legs. And yet, the gold armor was seamless, moving smoothly and easily. The metal shape was clearly alive.
Dominic, what is that, please?
That's Glory. She's put on her enforcement body. Organic metal with built-in weaponry. We all have many bodies these days, remember? I'll put on a more appropriate body in a moment.
How many bodies do you both have?
I have 27. Glory has 43. Our work requires us to be flexible. We keep them in a subspace locker and pop them on as necessary. You didn't think I looked like this all the time, did you?
And just like that, he became someone else too. Still basically human, still pale blue, Dominic now inhabited a more perfect, idealized form. Something about this new, calmly smiling face and the subtle body language made Owen want to listen to whatever this new Dominic had to say. He wanted to agree with Dominic and do anything that might please him. Owen shook his head sharply. A lot of the body language was subliminal, working directly on the subconscious, but Owen could see it clearly and shrugged it off. He glared at Dominic, who smiled easily.
Congratulations. Most people can't even see what I'm doing, let alone shake it off so quickly. As a defender of humanity, I don't like using weapons. I prefer more subtle methods. There's always the chance I can break these people free of De Langford's conditioning.
We're going down to the unloading bay. We'll take the lead.
Owen shuddered at how much Glory sounded like a Hayden man.
You stay behind us and protect yourself. Don't get in our way and try to stay out of trouble.
You really don't know me at all.
Glory and Dominic led the way through the gleaming steel corridors. There had already been so many twists and turns that Owen should have been hopelessly lost, but somehow he wasn't. He could sense the shape and layout of the whole prison structure and his position in it. After following Hazel back through time, this was simple.
The prisoners are limited to just the one body, and their only weapons will be what they can improvise.
I'll try persuasion first. If that doesn't work, you're on, Investigator. Try and keep the damage to a minimum.
Of course, Defender.
They entered the unloading bay. It was empty, just a great gleaming cavern of steel with the usual accoutrements. Glory tramped heavily about, checking that everything was as it should be. She wouldn't have put it past De Langford to have somehow booby-trapped the place, but all seemed clear. Dominic bent over the single control console, making sure the airlock was still secure. Owen looked around thoughtfully. Dominic shook his perfect head unhappily.
I was worried De Langford's people might have seized a ship and brought it here so De Langford could escape in the confusion, but the sensors show only our own ship still in orbit. Only we can call it down, and both of us would rather die than betray our trust. DeLangford knows that. So what is he planning?
I'm pretty sure I heard something.
You did. The prisoners are here.
The bay door slammed open, and a mob of howling men surged in. Dozens of mad-eyed prisoners carrying clubs and sharp-edged tools. Dominic Cairo stepped forward to face them, and those at the front stopped as though they'd run into a brick wall. The crowd behind gathered up, blocking the doorway and holding the rest back. Dominic smiled on the prisoners, and some actually smiled back.
Stop! Please, stop and think about what you are doing.
Some of the mob were already smiling and nodding their heads in agreement. A few actually responded like children, desperately sad at disappointing a beloved father.
I'm so sorry! I'm a terrible thing! Horrible thing!
And then, someone at the back of the crowd lifted an energy gun. Owen darted forward impossibly quickly and thrust Dominic out of the way. The energy beam shot on to ricochet harmlessly off Glory's golden chest.
Where the hell did they get an energy gun?
Glory stepped forward, gun nozzles protruding from her barrel chest. Flesh exploded where the energy beams hit, and men were blown apart into gobbets of bloody meat as the guns fired again and again, not pausing to recharge. Glory pressed forward, blasting a hole right through the mob. But still more men pressed forward from the back. And Glory couldn't kill them fast enough to stop them all. Dominic shook off Owen's supporting hands and lurched forward to support his partner.
You're worthless wretches! Your lives are meaningless! You should never have been ripped from your mother's womb! You sicken me!
Some of the prisoners crashed to the steel floor, collapsing into tears or comas. Dominic's body pumped out pheromones that acted as mood influencers. He was a defender of humanity, and these were his only weapons. He stood his ground, even as another energy beam narrowly missed his head. Glory and Dominic stood together, each of them fighting in their own way, but the sheer number of rioters overwhelmed them. The prisoners swarmed around Glory, beating on her metal body with their improvised weapons, and Dominic's perfect face ran with blood. Step by step, they were forced to retreat from the doorway and allow more and more of the prisoners into the bay. And Owen Deathstalker decided enough was enough. He'd given his two new friends every chance to do it themselves, but all their courage and skill clearly weren't enough. So he drew his sword and went forward to meet the prisoners. He was quickly in among them, graceful as a dancer, deadly beyond hope or mercy. He cut a bloody path through the howling mob, and none of them could stand against him. They weren't used to facing cold steel. Owen felt faster and stronger than he ever had before, even when using his family's famous boost. He cut men down with a brutal savagery that shocked even the hardened prisoners. Bodies fell to every side, and blood splashed the steel walls and pooled thickly on the floor. Owen cut and slashed and hacked, driving the prisoners back. At the end, the last few turned to run, and Owen went after them and cut them down. One man still stood in the doorway. He carried an energy gun, but he put it down on the steel floor.
Oh, my. I didn't anticipate you. An unexpected pleasure. I am DeLangford. Who or what might you be?
I'm the Deathstalker, and that's all you need to know. Now stay where you are and put those hands in the air. Don't do anything sudden, or I'll whittle you down into a more pleasant person.
Owen looked back at Glory and Dominic, who had changed back into their previous selves. They were both looking at him with open horror and shock on their faces. Owen felt a little put out, given that he just saved their lives.
What's the problem?
Dear God, I never saw anything like that in my life. You cut them up like meat. It was hideous, inhuman. You're a barbarian. Men don't act like that.
Maybe not in your time. I was raised to be a warrior and trained in the hardest school of all. You should be grateful. They would have torn you apart if I hadn't stopped them.
You didn't have to kill them all.
Yes, I did.
You enjoyed it. You smiled and laughed as you butchered those men.
Owen considered that.
I take pride in work well done. And there's nothing like living when others want you dead to make a man feel good. I don't glory in their deaths, but I don't feel guilty about it either. I notice you were happy enough to shoot them from a distance with those terribly efficient guns of yours. That's no way to kill. It takes real guts to get in close with a blade, to put your life on the line, and depend on your skill and courage to bring you through. Murder should never be cold and impartial. You should always be prepared to pay in blood for the blood you shed.
Yes! You understand.
Shut up. So, Glory, Dominic, what do we do with him? He's the cause of all this death, after all.
Not death. Art. I took these worthless men and made them significant. What happened here will be told across the Empire. I made your glorious last stand possible. I took people who never mattered, even to themselves, and made them magnificent. If only for a moment. They are part of a story now, a legend that will be told for centuries. I made your heroism possible, gave it shape and meaning. You should thank me. I made you art. And now, I surrender.
There isn't a legend that's worth one man's death. Trust me, I know. So what do we do with him?
He goes back to his cell, after we've searched him very thoroughly. The computers will be back online any time now.
And that's it? He's responsible for everyone who died here. You could have died here. How can you be sure he won't do it again?
None of that matters. He has surrendered. We can't punish him now. It wouldn't be right.
The hell with that.
Owen looked at DeLangford and let his anger lash out. DeLangford's head exploded, showering the surroundings with blood and brains and skull fragments. Owen shook thick drops of blood from the end of his sword, and then put it away.
What kind of future do you come from? That can produce creatures like you and the mad mind?
I should kill you where you stand. You're not fit to live in human society.
I would suggest that you don't try.
Dominic took Glory by the arm.
This is too big for us. He has to go to court, to stand before the Emperor. Let Aether decide what's to be done with him.
Actually, I'll decide what's to be done with me. But I want to meet your Emperor. I'm sure there are many things he can tell me about the mad mind. Don't worry, I promise I won't hurt him.
You'll have to wear the energy shackles. We can't risk the Emperor's safety.
If it will make you feel better.
The energy bands crackled about his wrists again, and the investigator and the defender both relaxed a little. Glory called down her orbiting ship, while Dominic studied Owen closely. Owen studied Dominic. He was getting the hang of reading body language.
You love her, don't you?
What?
Have you ever told her?
No, I...
Do it. Don't leave it till it's too late.
And so the three of them went down to Heartworld, which would one day be called Golgotha, and then Logris, in a large and blocky ship that had no name, only a number. Owen didn't recognize the design at all. It moved smoothly through space, threading its way easily through the heavy traffic, and finally slipped into the planet's atmosphere with only the slightest of jolts. Owen sat at the back of the cabin, firmly strapped in for his own safety, and amused himself by changing the colors of his energy bands when nobody was looking. Dominic and Glory spent most of the trip arguing about where they were going and how best to get Owen to the Emperor. They seemed very firmly of the opinion that there were a great many political and religious factions who would just love to get their hands on Owen, for all kinds of reasons, few
of
them good.
Would be quite willing to destroy him and anyone with him rather than let any other group get to him first.
I don't want to think about how much damage some groups could do if they gained control over him and his abilities.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that. I doubt very much there's anyone here who can make me do anything I don't want to.
This didn't seem to reassure Glory or Dominic in the least, so the rest of the trip passed pretty much in silence, until Glory slowed the ship right down so she could show Owen something. A section of the bulkhead next to Owen became transparent, so he could look out at the planet below. It wasn't much of a view. In the middle of a desert area lay a great crater, deep and dark, full of twisting gray mists shot through with shifting lights. But just the look of the crater made Owen feel strangely uneasy, disquieted.
You're looking at what used to be Angel City. Now it's just a hole in the earth, full of quantum instability. Millions of people died here, wiped away by a moment's anger of the mad mind, a wound in the world that will never heal. Most of the people died immediately. They were the lucky ones. Unfortunately, those closest to the edges of the effect were only partially touched. They live on, no longer human, in a place where reality is only a sometime thing. We've seen some of them, monsters, in shape and spirit, constantly changing, never solid or confirmed in one nature for more than a few moments. Angel City is a place of horror now, and always will be.
We've sent in all kinds of rescue operations. Scientists and priests protected by force shields, all volunteers wanting to help. None of them ever come back. The last I heard, the powers that be were trying to figure out how to enclose the whole area in one big industrial-strength force shield, and then just blast the thing out into space, where it can be someone else's problem.
Why not just aim it into the sun?
What if the quantum instability were to affect the sun? For now, all we can do is put up warning signs, saying here be monsters. Post guards to shoot down the poor things that occasionally come crawling up out of the crater. And pray to God that the mess doesn't start spreading.
And this is just one of the nightmares your friend, the Mad Mind, left us.
What one power can do, perhaps another can undo.
Owen reached out with his mind. He could feel Hazel's presence permeating the crater, dark and confused, moving restlessly over the wound in the earth, never still.
It wasn't her, just something she'd left behind, and Owen erased it in a moment, like a memory he didn't want to remember. The gray mists and the shifting lights disappeared like a bad dream, and there was just a great hole in the ground. Owen could sense sparks of life moving in the crater, but they were just people now. He hoped they wouldn't remember either. He sank back in his seat, exhausted for the moment.
How the hell did you do that? What kind of power have you got?
I don't know. I'm still learning. Hopefully, enough to stop Hazel when I finally catch up to her.
Can you bring back the city and the people who died?
No. I'm only human.
Those energy shackles aren't affecting you at all, are they?
Afraid not. But I'll keep them on at court if it will make everyone feel more comfortable.
I should crash the ship into the ground right now, rather than risk letting you run loose.
Please don't. It wouldn't affect me at all. Will you relax? I'm not another mad mind. I just want to talk to your Emperor. Find out what he knows about Hazel. Why she became what she was, and why she came here in the first place. I need to know these things if I'm to stop her. You've no idea what she's going to become, eventually. I'll still play the prisoner at court for your sakes. I don't want to harm anyone. I just want answers to my questions, and then I'll be on my way.
Why don't you just dig them out of our minds? You could do that, couldn't you?
Yes, but I won't. Because that would be inhuman, Defender.